Gluttony is in many ways the most mysterious of the seven deadly sins to me. When I began preparing this series, this is the message, the talk, the sermon that I was least looking forward to giving because I wasn't sure what I was going to say. But as I began doing research on the subject of gluttony, my eyes were opened to a whole world that I'd never previously considered. And so I invite you to journey with me tonight as we take a look at this very misunderstood subject. The first thing that stands out to me when I start examining gluttony is that the church does not seem to take it very seriously at all, but our society has made it into a huge deal. In fact, of the seven deadly sins, gluttony is the one our society is least enthusiastic about. If you're greedy, you can go to Las Vegas or Wall Street. If you're filled with lust, you can go to Hollywood or Las Vegas. In fact, if you're filled with almost any of the seven deadly sins, you can celebrate them to excess in Vegas or other places scattered around the country. But gluttony. Gluttony is not a sin that people get excited about. Let's start with Christians. Today's Christian community does not take the sin of gluttony very seriously at all. There's a pastor in Dallas, Texas, pastor of Fellowship Church, named Ed Young. Ed Young was quoted in a magazine not too long ago as just commenting on the fact that after service, he almost always goes out to eat with some people from his congregation. And he's a pretty health-conscious guy, so he gets some food that is good for him. And he watches all these Christians in suits who just come out of churches go up to the big buffet, pile up their plates high with, you know, pork chops and three slices of cake and all this horrible, horrible foods, and bring them back to their plate, to their table, sit down, bend their heads, and begin to pray, "Dear Lord, please bless this food we're about to receive." And he's thinking on the inside, that's nuts. What you need to be doing is praying before you get up and go to the buffet. "Dear God, help me choose foods that please you." And in fact, it's not just anecdotal evidence. Statistics show that American Christians are fatter than other Americans. That there's something about being a believer that plumps you out. Now, that's depressing news, isn't it? Everybody's like, "That's it. I'm going to become a Muslim." And there's different speculation as to why this is. I would submit that one reason is because I've said our society collectively takes gluttony much more seriously than the church does. So why doesn't the church take gluttony very seriously? Well, gluttony is barely mentioned in the Bible. Gluttony is one of those ideas that was largely birthed out of the Roman Catholic tradition, particularly the monastic tradition out in the desert in the 4th and 5th centuries. And with today's evangelical Protestants who take the Bible as their primary source, their only source of religious guidance, if something's not explicitly mentioned a lot in the Bible, then it can't really be one of the deadly sins. And there's some truth to that. It's never listed as something in the Bible that God is putting right up there at the very worst of all possible ways to behave. However, I would say there's some wisdom for us in the historical tradition of the church, if we'll take a few minutes to dig into it. I think that we're too quick to write off gluttony. And ironically, we're quick to write it off for the same reason our society is quick to write it in. Let me proceed to that. Our society has traded an eternal perspective for a temporal one. And they've stopped looking into the afterlife and thinking about heaven and hell and started worrying about what will bring them heaven or hell on earth. And gluttony is a sin that, by and large, brings you hell on earth. People do not like fat people. As evidence, I submit Baywatch. What's the point of the story? If you're thin and beautiful, you're good. If there was anybody who was pudgy on that show, anybody who sort of rippled as they walked, you could be sure they were the one who did the crime, whatever the crime was. It's nuts. And it's because of the way that we thought about evil and fatness and thinness in our society. We've condemned fat people to hell on earth. And because no one wants to go to hell, no one wants to be fat. And so gluttony's right out. Now, here's the thing. That's not really the only thing that gluttony's about. We've secularized gluttony down to this one thing, overeating, eating to excess. Now, clearly, that's a part of what gluttony's about. But that's not all of it. Let me give you sort of a working definition tonight of some of the different attributes of gluttony. And then we're going to dig into the Bible and take a closer look at what God does say about gluttony on the few times that he talks about it. Gluttony is any one of a couple of different things. Gluttony is eating too much, eating without restraint, making food your master instead of your servant, not being able to say no to it, becoming addicted to any substance, whether it be chocolate, or the caffeine that is within it, alcohol, marijuana, any consumable, letting that thing dominate your life. That is one aspect of gluttony. Another aspect of gluttony is allowing it to dominate your emotional life, allowing it to, how do I want to put this? Well, okay, you've heard of comfort foods, right? Okay, well, what's the number one comfort food in America? Yeah, chocolate or ice cream. Depends on who you talk to. Actually, statistically, ice cream wins, but in a group largely filled with women, you usually hear about chocolate. sorry. Not just stereotype, but also statistics bear that out. Now, comfort foods are called comfort foods for a reason. They give us comfort. They give us solace. They give us security. They give us happiness on a bad day. If someone dumps us, we go and we find our comfort food, and we get peace. If someone backstabs us, we go to our comfort food, we get a little bit of consolation. Now, that is not necessarily intrinsically bad any more than putting your favorite music on your iPod or taking a hot bath or going for a run because it gives you endorphins is automatically bad. The question is not the what of it, but the proportion of it, the domination of it in your life. And I'm sorry to have to say that, because whenever I say that, I know that people invariably start thinking in the back of their head, well, where's the line? Look, I don't know where the line is. I just know there is one, and we need to be aware of it. I think that if I needed to sort of highlight the perils of gluttony from the Bible, probably the best place to look is a little remembered story from the book of Numbers. The book of Numbers, chapter 11, starting in verse 4. The rabble with them began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost, also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. The manna was like coriander seed and looked like resin. The people went around gathering it and then ground it in a handmill or crushed it in a mortar. They cooked it in a pot or made it into cakes, and it tasted like something made with olive oil. When the dew settled on the camp at night, the manna also came down. Moses heard the people of every family wailing, each at the entrance to his tent. The Lord, notice this, the Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. What happened there? What happened in that story? Well, at the most superficial level, there were whiners, right? Their mom didn't put their favorite sandwich in their lunch pail, and so they're like, ah! Having a meltdown because they got turkey instead of peanut butter and jelly or something. At a deeper level, this is what was going on. These people had been given a gift from God. More specifically, a miraculous gift. In the middle of a desert, food appears on the ground day after day, enough to keep them alive, enough to give them hope, and to give them a future. And yet, because it was not exactly the way that they wished it was, because it fell short of their imaginings, and it was imaginings. Look at what they're saying. Back in Egypt, we ate for free. Yeah, you were slaves. They feed the goose up until the day that it's slaughtered, too. Doesn't mean it was a good situation. But they're remembering what they think it was like. They're imagining. And reality fails compared to their imagination. So they begin to reject God's gift. They begin to complain about God's miraculous gift. That makes God angry. Let's pause with this story for just a second. What's our working definition of an idol here in Chi Alpha? Anybody remember? An idol is anything that gives us what? That's right, security or identity or significance. Security or significance that gives to us the things that God ought to be giving to us. It sounds to me, based on our definition of comfort foods, the foods that give us emotional nurture in times of trouble, and based on this story right here where people are rejecting God's gift in order to focus on something that's not even real, that we might perhaps have a candidate for idolatry in food here. In fact, Paul says in Philippians 3:18 and 19, "For many live as enemies of the cross of Christ. I have often told you of them. And now I tell you, even with tears, their end is destruction. Their God is their belly. Their glory is in their shame, and their minds are set on earthly things." Their God is their belly. Because their minds are set on earthly things, because they're thinking naturalistically, materialistically, I don't mean greedily by that, I mean as though all that is protons, electrons, and neutrons floating through space. Just quarks and the laws that operate upon them. That's all we is. Because they're thinking that way, they know no other place to look to get the things they ought to get from God than in the world around them. And so they become sensate. They indulge themselves sensually. And they find quickly that one of the most rewarding senses to indulge is a set of sensations that comes from their belly. Their God is their belly. Food can become idolatry. And that's not a good thing. And that's why we end the previous passage with "the Lord was exceedingly angry." Let's pick it back up, skip down a few verses to Numbers 11, verse 31. "Then a wind went out from the Lord, and it brought quails from the sea, and let them fall beside the camp, about a day's journey on this side, and a day's journey on the other side, all around the camp, about 2 cubits deep on the ground." That's about a yard. That's a lot of bird flesh. "So the people worked all that day and night, and all the next day gathering the quails. The least anyone gathered was 10 homers. Don't! Oh, you were thinking it too. You know you were. Speak about gluttony. Donuts. The Simpsons, the ultimate metaphor for life. "And they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. But while the meal was still between their teeth, before it was consumed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people. And the Lord struck the people with a very great plague. So the place was called..." "Because there they buried the people who had the craving." Their God is their belly. Because of what they were imagining food could do for them, they rejected a real gift from God on the basis of an elusive imaginary hope. And God was displeased. Now, I want to be clear about a few things this evening first. And I should have said this at the very beginning of the message. What I'm talking about obviously intersects with the subject of eating disorders somewhat. Look, in general, all of the talks that I base out of the Bible are oriented within the framework of a normal psychology. If you're wrestling with depression or with an actual clinical eating disorder, then a lot of what I'm saying may not be phrased exactly the way that you need to hear it in order to fit into your worldview or fit into your system. If you're actually wrestling with an eating disorder, you need to get professional help. Talk to me. I can help you find people who will be of service to you. That's number one. Number two, a lot of times the church is accused, and with some justice, of being against pleasure, of being ascetics. And is it ascetics or ascetics? I can never remember. Ascetics. Ascetics just sounds wrong. Ascetics. This is not a talk about asceticism, like enjoying food is always wrong, or, you know, wanting to eat, you know, something that is tasty instead of something that is bad is an evil desire. In fact, I'd like to take just a minute to drive that point home, because people often misunderstand it, and it's often a criticism leveled against the church and against the way of Jesus Christ. We read in Psalm 104, 14 to 15, "You cause the grass to grow for the cattle," speaking of God, "and plants for people to cultivate, to bring forth food from the earth, and wine to gladden the human heart, oil to make the face shine, and bread to strengthen the human heart." God made some things just so that they can be enjoyed. In fact, let's also look at Deuteronomy 14:26, one of my favorite verses in the Bible, simply for its blah blah factor. Deuteronomy 14:26. Back in the day, the only place you could offer your tithe was at the temple. It was a long trap for some people way back before they had cars. And so God made alternate provision for those who couldn't make it down to the temple to be able to make an offering. And the way they would do their offering was, well, read it with me. Take their silver they were going to use for the tithe. Beginning the quote, use the silver to buy whatever you like. Cattle, sheep, wine, or other fermented drink, or anything you wish. Then you and your household shall eat there in the presence of the Lord your God and rejoice. Take your tithe money and throw a party.
Didn't learn that in Sunday school, did you?
Now, by the way, that's assuming you can't find a place to tithe. If you need recommendations, I would like to suggest your local church. And if you haven't found a local church, I'd like to suggest one of those to you. Come talk to me after the service. But take your tithe money, throw a party, and buy whatever you want. Have a good time. Enjoy the food. And that way you will worship God. Isn't that awesome? But so there's nothing wrong intrinsic with enjoying food, with liking it, with eating chocolate chip cookies or going to Starbucks. Now, Starbucks is probably in some ways the number one symbol of gluttony in America today. It's all about indulgence. Did you know that the average person who sets foot in a Starbucks is going to do so almost 10 times, almost 9 more times that month? And it's going to drop an average of about $60. $60! That's probably for about a gallon of liquid. Now, they're saying that gallon of liquid is worth $60 to me. Wow, that's a remarkable claim. Now, why are they saying that? Well, two reasons. Number one, they're by and large caffeine addicts. Addiction's never a good thing, and you know, you'll do whatever it takes to get the drug you got to get. But it's not just about the caffeine. You can get caffeine cheaper, right? Sanka, Folgers, the dorm coffee machines, Dr. Pepper, Mountain Dew. A lot of cheap places to get caffeine. It's not about the caffeine alone. No, there's something else, and a difference between the caffeine need and the something else is $60. It's what people are willing to plunk down in order to get this experience of Starbucks. And what it all comes down to is Starbucks makes them feel a certain way about themselves and about the world. It's a treat to themselves. It's Starbucks, by and large, doesn't get you fat, although their drinks are very, very bad for you. Like the triple latte foam express whipped triple cinnamon pepper cappuccino thingy. Seriously, those things are bad for you. Compare them to the average shake at McDonald's sometimes, and you'll be shocked at the nutritional superiority of McDonald's over Starbucks. But by and large, they don't get you fat, but nonetheless, they're about gluttony. Because gluttony is not just about overeating. In fact, one of the popes, I forget, I think Pope Gregory the Great, said it this way. Gluttony is about eating too much, too quickly, too greedily, too daintily, by which he means too finicky, too picky, like I will only eat lightly toasted toast. I will not eat dark toast. I am above that. Being, you know, an obnoxious gourmet. And he said something else. I forget what it was. But gluttony is about more than overeating. At the root, the point I want to emphasize tonight is gluttony is about letting food take the place of the good things God has given you in life. So let me return to comfort foods and we'll wind this down. So you get dumped by your boyfriend. So you have a professional failure. So you go and things don't go so well in the day. And so you come back, you get your favorite comfort food. You're a gal, maybe you get ice cream or chocolate. You're a guy, maybe you get pizza or beer. And you begin to indulge yourself. You begin to just allow the food to do for you what you need done in your life emotionally right then. In that moment, you are becoming like the Israelites in the book of Numbers chapter 11. Instead, look to other people. First, you know, if you've been betrayed relationally, you've got friends, right? Hang out with them. Then maybe you guys will go out and eat together. Maybe they'll say, you know what you need tonight? Girlfriend, Cheesecake Factory, let's go. Again, I'm not saying it's wrong to enjoy food. In fact, Jesus said, it's not what you put in your mouth that defiles you. It's what comes out of your heart. It's why you put something in your mouth that can defile you. Same food can be sinful, and another time it can be noble, depending on the context in which you eat it. Or maybe you need to be turning to God in prayer right then. Dear Lord, I'm overwhelmed. I need you, instead of making your God your belly. Like I said, the church doesn't take gluttony too seriously anymore. But that's because, by and large, we've forgotten that it's not primarily about health and your body being a temple of the Holy Ghost, which is the most common way it's preached on. There's truth there, I suppose. The real problem with gluttony is that it displaces God from His throne. and takes the good gifts God has actually given us in our lives and rejects them in favor of the pleasure that we get from our belly. Tonight, the way we're going to close is different from normal. We're not going to have an altar call kind of experience or any multimedia presentation or anything like that. Instead, I just want to do a quick prayer and then segue to some questions and answers. There's a lot that we need to talk about that I just didn't know how to structure into my message tonight, but I'm sure that you guys have questions about. I will gladly sit here and field questions until we close at 9:30. Join me in prayer.